It's Tuesday, September 8th. Chicago 6 with a devil it knows. Young players and people in general continue to get blamed for COVID. And what kind of football will we see having played no preseason games? I'm Jeff Schwartz alongside Matt Ford. And this is Jeff Schwartz's Smur. The new Gabe is sitting out the most important week of the year. Whatevs. So we have Matt Ford in. Matt, welcome in. Matt, okay. I have been tempered excitement for football because I wanted to make sure it was coming back, right? Like we've had so many things in 2020 pulled away from us, right? Especially in the sporting world, but even in life, we had a lot of important people pass away. You know, Kobe Bryant passed away. I've never been emotional, I think, before of any athlete passing away, but I grew up watching him play. Like, it's been a bad year, but football's back this week and it's coming back. Like, it's actually here. It's here. Chiefs, Texans in two exact days. And I could not be more excited. I'm glad people are coming along this journey with us. There's still so much to talk about. And I'm so jacked, dude.
I know. It's finally here. I'm letting myself dream. It's about to happen. We're about to see Patrick Mahomes and Mitch Schwartz take the field in 2 days. Let's fly.
Whatevs. Yeah, no, I know. We'll do our gambling show later in the week. I have some bets. I have some bets for this Thursday night football game. And there's obviously for the rest of the week. But Thursday night in specific, one I just absolutely love. So I can't wait to get to that. But we have a lot to get to, Matt, as we look at, you know, heading into week one of this 2020 NFL season.
Yeah, man. Well, it's great to be on the Monday show. I'll get this started with our first topic, which is sort of a topic buffet, to use a thing that we'll never go to ever again, a buffet. There was just a lot of news that happened in the league. First of all, Deshaun Watson signed a huge contract with the Texans. I don't think either of us are going to have a great opinion here other than like,
no.
Great kid, great deal, makes a lot of sense. But wanted to leave some space if you've got anything.
I'm happy anytime a player gets paid, even though I might say like that guy's not worth it, or like I still am deep down excited, right? That's life changing money for Deshaun Watson. Obviously, the videos of his family were fantastic, and obviously they're very excited for him. And it's what they should do. And really, my thought when it happened was, oh geez, someone have to pay Dak $40+ million a year. I mean, like that was my first thought. I said, oh boy, like that's really going to happen. Think about this: the Texans continue to win games with Deshaun Watson with what people would call maybe a subpar coach, right? And a roster that's not very good. They just win, Matt. They win. And it's because of him. He still needs to improve a little bit of his pocket presence. He's not the best at times when it comes to just kind of being aware and that he takes way too many sacks, but he's so supremely gifted. And I'm really glad he got paid.
Yeah, me too. Obviously the right move, but maybe not the right move. Let's talk about Chicago, who announced that Mitch Trubisky was going to be the starter for week one. Obviously, they traded for Nick Foles this offseason, gave up a fourth round pick for this. This, to me, is just atrocious, just an abomination of a set of decisions. But why don't you go first? What did you make of this news?
Yeah, so the Bears are sticking with Trubisky, which is what I thought they would do all along. And there's many reasons for this. One, and we get back to what I said last time. I'm going to use this throughout the rest of my life. Now, I never did the don't lie to me, don't lie to yourself kind of football theory. I've always used it for life.
Yeah.
But the Bears lied to themselves about Trubisky, and they went ahead and brought in Foles for sort of competition, right? But here's the thing, guys, is when you put in assets to draft Trubisky, right? They traded up to get Mr. Trubisky. They have built a team around him. You cannot give up on him this soon, right? You just can't do it. He played okay the year they went to the playoffs in 2018, right? I mean, he played good enough. Last year was bad. You have to hope you get more out of him. It's too early to just throw him aside. If you bring Nick Foles in, you're admitting, hey, we screwed up. We wasted entire, it could be a decade, right, Matt? Like, by the time they draft someone else, they figure that out. You've wasted Khalil Mack. You've wasted Hicks. You've wasted all this defensive talent. You've wasted all of it. I mean, that's how bad missing a first-round quarterback can be. It sets you back a decade, right? A long period of time if you miss on that quarterback. Because, of course, you missed out on draft slots as well because you traded to get Trubisky. So there's a lot of issues with moving on from him. So you have to put all the resources, all your energy into getting him on the field and making sure he's your guy or not your guy. And the Bears are in the worst spot in all of football, Matt. The worst spot. Really, and I would say in all sports. They're not good enough to win the Super Bowl with Trubisky, and they're not bad enough to draft in the top five. They're in the middle again. And they're going to be in the middle with Trubisky. He's not going to be much improved. Now, they're going to they trimmed down the offense a little bit, right? They've got rid of their old staff they had last season. They're going to run the ball a little bit more, I think. Do kind of the quick dink and dunk stuff, but Trubisky's not the guy. And Foles is not really the guy either. I do not think outside of Philly, Nick Foles is appreciated enough for what he did in 2017. I think it's incredible. Look, his best year of his career was 2013. Then he's basically out of football, came back. He did not play terribly great up until that Vikings game. The Atlanta game was good. He had no touchdowns, no interceptions, completed 70-ish percent of passes and 260 yards or something like that, but no touchdowns, no interceptions. Then he played out of his mind for two games. He's never been that guy outside of one game the following season when he had 400 yards. He's been hurt ever since then. Gardner Minshew beat him out when he came back last season. So Foles wasn't the answer either, Matt. The Bears should have got Cam Newton. I mean, I think we all will agree on that. But this made sense of why they had to stick with Trubisky. They have, again, they put the resources into drafting him. They spent the time, obviously, in scouting him and drafting him. They need him to hit. Otherwise, it sets their team back a decade because they have to go find themselves another quarterback. And Nick Foles is just not the guy. And so you have to hope, you know, that Trubisky finds a way to get it done.
But hold on a second. I want to sort of unpack this point a little bit, because you're right that if you draft a quarterback that high, you trade up and then you miss, it really does set you back unless you find an easy way out. Now, if the Bears give up more draft capital for Nick Foles, who is clearly like not bad enough to clearly be a backup, but is actually so far, it seems he's not good enough to overtake Mitch Trubisky, then why even get him in the first place? Like, I feel like there's more of a, like, you don't get him to be a backup. If you want a backup quarterback, go sign Case Keenum. You could have gotten him for like a minimum contract. Like, there's a million. You could have gotten Andy Dalton. You mentioned Cam Newton. Cam Newton's probably too good. So I just don't understand what they even were thinking with Foles in the first place.
Well, it wasn't a good decision. I think they thought, okay, you know, if you had a full offseason, there might be a chance for Nick Foles to come and win that job. Yeah. I do wonder if the shortened part of training camp hurt the ability for him to get up to speed, but it's an offense he's run before. I mean, he was in the West Coast offense with Doug Peterson. And look, there's variations obviously between what Nagy does and Peterson, but it's generally the same concept. So I don't think that was a concern. Obviously, he's a very bright kid. I mean, there's no surprise about that. I don't know why they made the move. I think they thought maybe he could be their savior, and they got him into camp and realized he's not that guy anymore. And Trubisky gives him, I guess, the best upside. You know, he runs a little bit better. He can maybe make plays with his legs, which, you know, I hate. It's kind of an idea of a quarterback, because that's not what the best guys do.
Thanks.
Right? They pass the ball. But again, Matt, the Bears are stuck, man. And that's the worst part about this. If you're a Bears fan, is you're stuck. You're stuck. You have nowhere to go. You're not gonna...
You have another quarterback. Play him. Like, see what you've got. Like, yeah, you know what Mitch Trubisky is.
But Nick Foles... But Nick Foles is not going to get you to the promised land
is
either.
Is Mitch?
So if you have two guys that are equal, let's say, you're going to go with the guy you drafted and kind of have to put the resources into, which is Trubisky, over. I think this is an indictment on
a guy. Like, it just makes no sense. Like, I don't even think I'm disagreeing with you. I think I'm agreeing angrily. Like, I just don't understand.
Well, you're angrily saying, like, why'd they make this move? They weren't going to play him. I thought all along the goal was to play Trubisky. Like, that's what I thought the plan was. And so this is not surprising to me. Obviously, I understand your point is valid. Why trade for Nick Foles and give him, you know, a guaranteed money over the next couple of years if he wasn't going to be your guy? I understand that argument.
Doesn't make any sense.
I'm just telling you from what Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy think, which is that we got to make sure Trubisky's our guy. Maybe Trubisky improved. I don't know. I mean, it would seem unlikely, yeah, but it's possible.
With no practice and no preseason games, he's definitely better. My Washington football team traded a 6th-round pick for Kyle Allen, who played in Scott Turner's offense last year and I think is a second-year player. And everyone was like, that's way too much. And now, like, Dwayne Haskins is never going to be able to play with this guy staring down the shoulder. This is a 4th-round pick and a Super Bowl MVP. It just feels like a huge price to pay for a guy that you don't even want to play. I just think
it ends up being a bad signing because he's not playing. But I get why they did it. And look, and you know, Kyle Allen was never, I thought Haskins would start the whole time. Obviously, Haskins was announced as a starter. I'm excited to see him play. With Trubisky, again, those are the reasons why I think they did it. Whether it's the right call or not, you disagree, obviously, because they paid Nick Foles. But in
they
the end,
they traded for him. They gave up more draft capital. It's like, what else? God, they're just, I don't understand.
It was, again, they lied to themselves about who Trubisky was, and they're paying the price for it now.
Well, let's move on to a decision I have no problem with, actually, which is the Dolphins named Ryan Fitzpatrick the starter for the beginning of the season. This wasn't a surprise to me at all, you know, with Tua coming off of the injury. But I wanted to see if you felt differently about that.
No, this is a great job by them. It makes a lot of sense. The Dolphins are not in a position to win right now. I know people are saying, hey, look, ooh, just look at this roster. Yeah, it's a young roster. It might have some talent, but they are really, really young. I mean, you look at their schedule. Here's their schedule, Matt. Would you start would you start Tua with the schedule? Patriots, Bills, Jacksonville, blah, blah. But then Seattle, San Francisco, Denver, Chargers, Rams, Cardinals.
Whew. I'm pretty sure we took them over in our AFC East preview.
Oh, I did not. I don't know if you did.
I think I may have.
And then they have the Jets and then a bye. After the bye, it's Jets, Bengals, Chiefs, Patriots, Raiders, Bills. I mean, like that bye, that you know, the Jets game sandwich with the bye feels like the time when you get two in. So it makes a ton of sense why they're not doing that.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm excited to see him play, but I'm also excited that they're not putting him in a bad spot. Last sort of transaction that happened before we move on to some other topics is Jadeveon Clowney finally signed. And we had talked about him last week or 2 weeks ago on our Thursday show about the NFC West and why the Seahawks decided not to re-sign him. Look, this to me reminds me of when you're a single person and you go to a bar and you see someone who you're interested in and it's like 9 o'clock. And you're like, I have all night. I'm not going to talk to this person, right? And then suddenly it's 11 o'clock and you're like, maybe now. No, I'm good. And then at 1 o'clock, everybody's trying to talk to everybody. And then all of a sudden that person's gone and you, who knows, that could have been the person that changed your life and you didn't talk to them. This is what happened with Jadeveon Clowney. He's been sitting out there all season, all off season. Anybody could have had him. And then all of a sudden the Saints and Titans get into this weird bidding war the week before the season starts. So he's not going to be acclimated to the team right off the top. Yeah. And then like, why didn't the Titans sign him 2 months ago? I just don't understand this. Like, what do they need to know between now and then to make this decision?
So I think many factors go into this. One is kind of expectations for a contract. He thought he was getting, you know, a 4-year deal, $22 million a year. Okay? He thought he was getting top end of the market and obviously wasn't. And for either a long period of time, he thought he'd get that deal at some point. And obviously that came to an end. And then it was, okay, let me hold out a training camp as long as possible. All older players do this, right? Like, let me just hold out as long as possible and we'll see what shakes out after training camp. And who wants me? And then obviously the last, you know, 3 or 4 days was a bidding war to get him to a certain price, which Tennessee did. It's a great deal for the Titans, by the way. It is a low risk and a ton of reward if Clowney puts up to his ability. The problem with Clowney, the reason why he didn't get that big deal, is he's way too inconsistent for a guy to get paid $20 to $22 million a year. He does not hit the quarterback enough. He doesn't impact games enough. He had one game last year where you're like, dang. He really impacted that game. It was that Monday night, Sunday night football college game against the Niners, right?
One big tackle in college.
Everyone looks at that tackle and thinks that's the guy who it is, right? The Michigan-South Carolina game. It's not who he is. And so no one was going to pay him that money for a guy they don't trust to bring it each and every Sunday. And I hate questioning guys' effort because I don't think it's an effort issue. I don't think he's as good as people think he is. And like that is like what this came down to is that he didn't get a deal he wanted. He didn't fire his agent, by the way. That Buzz Cook, who's a fabulous agent, didn't forever. It's Brett Favre's agent, famously. And like that doesn't help with signing him or not. And then he chose the Titans over the Saints. I think the Ravens were taking a chance on him. But I think the greatest thing to come out of this, though, was the Saints' idea of how to fit this under the cap.
Yeah.
Which was a sign and trade, which as the deal was never never done before. So do you want to explain or you mean to explain?
Yeah, I can get started. I mean, it was reported that we don't know who this other team was, but New Orleans was in talks with some other team, presumably a Dolphins, a Jaguars, a Washington, some team with a lot of cap space. And they were going to sign. Cleveland. Oh, it was Cleveland.
Yeah, Cleveland.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. The last report I saw didn't name a team. So,
oh, okay.
So
I thought it was Cleveland. Maybe not.
Well, if it's Cleveland, we'll leave this in. If it's not, we'll say it was a mystery team. So the point of this was they were going to sign Clowney and then trade him to the Saints. And they were going to sort of like, it was literally like borrowing him and then trading him away. It's obviously an NBA thing. This happens quite a bit, but it's even a little bit different in the NBA. Interesting idea. I respect the Saints for giving it a shot. But again, why didn't they just sign him in August? Like they could have just had him.
I agree. So the Saints have no money. They're going to be in a lot of pain next year.
Sure. They didn't mention, they could have given him six.
You didn't mention the part that is why this sign and trade thing was going to be. Is that basically because they couldn't pay the $15 million that he got. They're going to say, hey, Browns, you give them a $7 million signing bonus. You eat that signing bonus. We give you draft picks in return for that bonus, and we get Clowney back. And we only have to pay Clowney $7 million. Like, that was the transaction that was going to happen, was to get him for less money. The NFL was never going to allow it. I saw a report today, by the way, that there was some deal set up where the Ravens were going to be part of this trade, too, where they were going to end up getting Clowney via this backdoor channel thing that they were trying to do. But nonetheless, I mean, created by the Saints.
Created by the Saints, but again, could have had Clowney like in that weird time when Cam Newton signed, where it was like, if they waited another month for Cam Newton, there are going to be 12 teams bidding for him. And
I just think that it got to a point where Clowney was like, I'm just going to hang out because there's no point in signing and going to camp when I don't have to. And you know, maybe someone gets hurt, maybe someone panics and signs. You know, the Bears, obviously, you know, they panicked with Nick Foles. I mean, maybe a team panicked. Maybe someone gets hurt and they bring him in for more money. So it made sense why he waited. But I agree with you. It might take a little bit of time to get him up to speed and get him ready to play.
I mean, the Saints were apparently getting ready to part with a second rounder to this team that may or may not have been the Browns. Like, think about, it just boggles my mind how wasteful that is. It's like you could have had him. He was just sitting on the couch for the last 6 months. Well, we can move forward now that we've hit the news from the weekend. I was really interested in this story, Jeff, because I was doing I had the same sort of like realization of, oh my gosh, like football is actually about to happen this week. Is this going to work? And I read this article on Pro Football Talk talking about how veteran players were concerned that the younger players were going to need to be monitored more closely. They were saying, now training camp's over, you know, there's less at stake. Now players are going to obviously be living their lives for the next couple months. And they were saying that the young players would potentially have just more risk than the older players. And the first thing that came to my mind was Kirk Cousins last week saying like, oh, well, whatever. If I get sick, if I die, I die, was his actual quote. So I found this to be like an odd little example of ageism in the NFL, of just like saying, well, it's the young people who are going to screw this up. But I've never played professional football, so I was curious what you thought of this.
Well, young guys are the ones that go out to the club more often, like the ones that don't have families, the ones that are in practice squad. I mean, look, my practice squad year was a long time ago. It was 2008, obviously. We came in on Saturdays and we had to work out Saturday mornings. No one else did, right? They were preparing for the game. And so, you know, guys would go out Friday night and just be puking all Saturday as they worked out. I mean, like, young guys don't have responsibility. We just go out. We have a good time. And you know, you think you're 21, 22, 23, I'm invincible, I'm not going to get COVID, I'm going to go eat out, the rules don't apply to me. That's what they're worried about. It's not an ageism thing. I think that those guys just don't have as many things in their lives to keep them busy. I had a family when I was older in my career. I'm not going out to a club on Monday night after a game. Like, it's not going to happen. I think older players understand, too, the economics of this, right? If they get shut down for whatever reason, how that hurts them financially, how it hurts the league financially. They get all this. Younger players don't, Matt.
Well, I understand that, obviously. And we're seeing that with the college stuff where the, you know, obviously college kids are having these sort of outbreaks in their college towns, because of course, what I think is it's way more likely that a bad team is going to be the cause of this rather than like a good veteran or a good rookie on a good team. Like, isn't it more likely that the 47th guy on the Jaguars is going to break by week 4 when they're 0-3 and Gardner Minshew stinks and their whole team is falling apart and they're in Florida, rather than, you know, the guy, the rookie on the playoff team with good veteran leadership? Like, I think it's kind of lazy to say, oh, it's going to be the young guys that break this. Like, I think it's going to be the ones who don't have as much to risk. And I get that with like, oh, if you don't have a family, that's obviously less of a risk. But if I think I would be very hesitant to like play the Jaguars in week 17. Because at that point, like, they're going to be out of it. I don't mean to pick on the Jaguars, but like, they're going to be out of it. Those teams that are done after like week 8, like, how disciplined are they going to be? We've seen this all over the country. Like, everybody who doesn't like have direct experience with this thing thinks that it's not that big of a deal until it is.
So that's a very good point about teams that are kind of their season over, right? Do they lax on that? I think this is, obviously we're talking about the NFL, but I think college football is going to be that way. There'll be teams that are like, 1-6 and their players just all get sick and they just say, screw it, and we're just done for the season.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's way more likely in college football than in the NFL, because look, the money matters here. The NFL is going to fine you. If they hear or see you in an indoor restaurant, in a bar, in a club, in a movie theater, like, there's actual monetary consequences. Young players don't actually believe they're going to get fined. Like, they don't think it's, no one's going to find me. No one's going to find out. I'm at the bar. I'm at the club. All these NFL teams have spies. They're all going to find out, Matt.
Do you think that NFL players benefited from, I don't mean to pick on Lou Williams here, but I'm sure you saw that story. The guy who plays for the Clippers, he got photographed
at
Magic City in Atlanta.
Got some chicken wings, man. Yeah,
well, that's one of the things he probably got at Magic City. I almost feel like I'm glad the NFL is going second, given that they don't have the bubble. Like, they've already seen people fail and get caught and see that there's consequences, right? Like, players have to pay attention to that stuff, right?
Yeah, I think baseball is a better example, though, because they're not in a bubble right now. That's not what happened with the Marlins, and which it's clear on Hard Knocks that they're preaching.
Yeah.
Very. By the way, I love Hard Knocks, dude. This season's just...
It's tough.
It's just not very good.
Yeah. I thought the episode where they dealt with sort of the social movements was really cool to see that kind of unfold. But I will say, like, you and Gabe talked about the fudge guy. What's that guy's name? Clay, whatever. On the Rams.
The Panthers claimed him. They came with Charlotte. I should be his friend.
Oh, he should sublet your extra bedroom there. But it's like that guy would have been the 19th guy on any other Hard Knocks, but he was like the star of this one. That was sort of a good sign. And they had two teams to pick from. Like, come on, give me a little more, you know, Keenan Allen, give me a little more Robert Woods. Like, give me some something I can use in my drafts.
It's been poor, but I get it. It's tough. Look, Hard Knocks. The problem with Hard Knocks is, you know, there's so many teams have behind the scenes stuff now, right? The Chiefs have one, the Colts have one I've watched before, that everyone kind of knows how the sausage is made. But what makes Hard Knocks fun is the personalities. And it also signals the start of football. Sure. Like, you know, after the Hall of Fame game, like, the first episode comes out. You're like, oh my God, Hard Knocks is here. Football's happening. But because of the audio of this summer, it didn't feel quite right that Hard Knocks was on. But there's just no personalities. There's nobody. I mean, Clay Johnson is the linebacker's name. Like, he says fudge a bunch.
Yeah.
But like, it's not like, his story of like, knowing Brett Favre, and all right, well, he knows a famous football player.
I think Hard Knocks is unbelievable. And most years, what helps is the preseason games, which I think we should just pivot to now. But without that sort of action to follow along with and see, like, oh, look, the fourth string guy is going to come in. He's like, he better not miss his assignment here or else he's going to not make the team. Like, that's what Hard Knocks is. So we obviously just didn't get that this year, but
it's a good point.
I'm really curious about this lack of a preseason thing. So obviously there's been, you know, lots of ink spilled about how this is going to affect teams' preparation, right? But sure, I'm sort of looking at this from a gambling perspective just a little bit here, but like, I'm wondering, take a team like Kansas City, who obviously fairly familiar with. So they are known for having all these wrinkles in their offense, right? Like, you know, the jet sweeps and all these crazy packages. And in the preseason, they don't really show any of that stuff, but they're probably working some of their meat and potatoes stuff that they're going to use and build off of, right? So I'm curious that, like, if let's maybe start with a Kansas City or a Baltimore, those teams that have really complex offenses, just does the lack of a preseason mean that they're going to kind of like slowly phase that in? Or do you think that teams are just going to go crazy in week one and catch everybody by surprise?
I think that it's business as usual for those teams, the Chiefs and Ravens and Saints and Niners, with the same offense, the same quarterback. Business as usual for those teams. Will they have all the wrinkles in? Probably so, Matt. And the reason why is that the players all know them already. Like, there's, when you put in kind of game plan wrinkles, it's not a lot of crazy new stuff. It's just stuff out of different formations. It's okay, we're going to run our man beaters this week because the Texans, for example, run a ton of man. Here's our man beaters. Here's our zone beaters. Here's a new formation because of this is how they align. You're not like drawing in new plays each week that you've never run before, right? And to your point, though, it's true that, you know, training camp is used to work on everything in your playbook and then pare it down. But those teams already know, like Pat knows, there's nothing that Andy Reid is adding to the playbook that's so complex that Pat doesn't know it by now, right? Does that make sense? Like this offseason, they're adding some stuff, but it's not so complex that Pat doesn't know what he's doing. The Ravens, for example, they probably added some wrinkles in the passing game. I have to imagine they want to open up the passing game a little bit. Sure, would have been good for Lamar to have a couple of preseason games, no doubt. But it's not going to be so extensive, Matt, that he doesn't know what to do in the offense.
Sure.
And so the problem is the younger teams who don't have the luxury of being together for a long time, who don't have the luxury of a great play caller quarterback relationship. I think this is going to affect the offense a lot more than and defense will be affected via the tackling. I think tackling is going to be piss poor, but offensive, just rhythm and flow takes time to develop, and you haven't had that time in the preseason. So I'm really curious to see how it's like. We'll do our betting podcast, but like I am almost deathly afraid of betting the NFL. Like I have no idea. I've looked at the bets. I like three or four so far. I mean, pretty so far. And it's going to be tough to see how this goes. Like I'm almost treating the first 4 weeks of like a preseason. Like let's see what happens, and then by week 5, 6, 7, I should have a better grasp on what's happening. But the problem is the Super Contest starts week one,
not
week five, and I don't have time. I gotta start making my picks now.
Well, two piggybacks off of that. The first is I'm kind of worried that some of these teams, especially like the Bengals, they come to mind obviously with Joe Burrow coming in and a ton of potential, but not a lot of expectation. So I feel like they're probably going to treat the first couple of weeks a little bit like a preseason game, right? Like they're going to try to see what they've got with this guy and figure out what works and what doesn't. And in the preseason, you can tell a little bit of that stuff, I would think. So I think they're going to probably be doing like, are they even going to be thinking like, let's go win this game in week one? Or are they going to be like, let's see what we got with this Burrow guy. And like, if it's close at the end, we'll button it up.
That team is, dude, man, I don't know how that team's going to operate, man. Like I it's going to be so hard for Burrow. It's not LSU. It's not like you know, Northwestern State who they play week one.
Right.
It's going to be really hard for him to get a grasp of what's happening in the offense.
Well, I remember once when we were, Kyle, when we first started working together at the Action Network, you had this game that you circled in week one where the teams, I think it was Dallas versus the Panthers, and they both had new play callers. And week one, you were like, take the under here because the defenses are going to be buttoned up and these offenses aren't going to be in sync yet. Are you going to be thinking there's going to be a lot of points in week one? Or do you think it's going to be one of those, like the defense, like it seems like in all the preseason games, it starts with the defense being a little bit better than the offense. Is that, so that would
yeah,
mean unders.
I yes and no, because I think the tackling is going to be so bad that I don't know if people will be able to tackle, Matt. Like, I don't know. I don't know if defense will be able to tackle. Like, yeah, it's easy to say, and it's true. Like, the first couple of days of training camp, especially in pads, the defense is always ahead, right? They're playmakers. They're, you know, they just have to run. Of course, they have assignments, but a defensive lineman can just put his hand in the dirt and go, right? Offensive lineman got to think, okay, where's my blocking angle? What am I doing here? Where's this affecting? Where's the pressure? Like, we have more to kind of comprehend and see and move and everything, okay? So defenses tend to be ahead, and we catch up, all right? But part of the being ahead part is that, you know, you work on tackling and you work on being physical, and you have the preseason games as well, and there's none of that's there this year, right? There's no physicality because you had a pared down training camp and there's no tackling. So I can say to you, hey, this defense should be ahead of the offense in general, right? For the first preseason game. But I don't trust the tackling. A quarterback can throw a wide receiver screen out and the guy can just get 15 yards because they missed four tackles. Like, that's an easy offense. You don't need to be ahead or behind to run that offense. Just throw the ball out there. Can he make the tackle? Hmm. Right. And so, like, that's my concern with saying the defense is ahead. Yeah, they are to start training camp. They are the early preseason, but they're also allowed to kind of hit and tackle in the preseason. None of that's happening this year. So I do not know how good these teams will be without the physicality of training camp, a full training camp, I should say.
The other thing that I've been worried about is, I mean, forget the COVID testing part of this, where something could go wrong and, you know, we could have, God forbid, a Marlins situation happen in the NFL. It's possible. But the other thing that seems to be missing from this preseason, besides the games, is there hasn't been that, like, that holy shit injury yet, which seems to have always happened. I mean, the entire Eagles are injured somehow without playing a single game, which, like, we can, that could be a whole podcast of how the hell does that even happen. But I am curious, like, it feels like it's going to be those first couple weeks where it's hot. Like, it's 100 degrees in California. You know, how is that going to go for the Cowboys and the Rams? Like, you know, there's going to be all these, like, weird things that happen, I would think, right? Like, that those first couple hits really matter in preseason games, I would think, right? Yeah. To get your body tuned up. Like,
yeah, you like, so offensive linemen talk about getting calluses, right? We know what calluses are. Like, you know, if you lift weights, just a general home, you get calluses on your hands. When you get calluses on your hands, it makes it easier to grab those weights, right? It's that barrier for your skin to be able to hold on to that weight. It doesn't hurt your hands anymore. Well, if you're in training camp and you're hitting, right, your body gets those calluses built up. So when you get to Sunday, you're used to contact. That's my biggest fear for the season is injuries, 100% injuries. It's that guys have not been in position to get hit and be in positions where their bodies are awkward and absorbing loads and absorbing, you know, contact and punching and striking, all that stuff that you do in full training camp and a preseason. They don't have as much of that. So your body's not going to be used to the physical beating it takes for an NFL game. So I really am concerned about injuries this season. That's my number one concern. It's just everyone being hurt because of the lack of a normal buildup to the season.
Huh. That's two questions. First is, who is that worst for? It feels like it'd be running backs or offensive linemen or quarterbacks even.
Well, the quarterbacks don't get hit. Who's it worse for? I mean, I don't know if there's like a worse, I don't know, honestly. I don't really know. Yeah. I think it sucks for everyone.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that I found interesting,
I think that the lack of preseason hurts the offensive line maybe more than any other position, offensive line, quarterback, just the lack of practice of preseason. But as far as the physicality part of it, I'm not quite sure.
Well, the other part of this quickly is the refs. Like, I'm kind of wondering if we're going to see a fail Mary thing that happens in the first week because the refs didn't get the preseason. I'm serious. Like, I have a friend who is a producer for one of the networks that covers the games. I don't want to reveal him, but he was talking about how usually by week one, they've done four, sometimes five, if they do the Hall of Fame game, like they've done a lot of preseason reps too. And so they're a little bit worried about, oh, we got a new whatever theme song or graphic or whatever. Like, they don't have a preseason. The refs are going to be like that too, right? Like, the refs are going to come out there and be like, what's the pass interference rule again? Because it changes every goddamn year. Like, I have a feeling we're going to see some of those crazy calls in the first couple of weeks, right?
And also, I don't think people realize this. The referees go to training camp. Like, they go, they're there in the spring and they come to training camp and they referee practice.
Like, team training camps? 3 or 4.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They come to our training camp and they referee 3 or 4 days.
Huh.
We ask them questions. They show us the videos of like what, you know, what our emphasis is going to be this year. And obviously they're not doing that this year. So you're right about refereeing. It's I'm glad football's back, but it's going to be just a complete, I just don't know what to expect, Matt. I don't know.
I think we're just going to take a lot of points in the first couple of weeks and just say, let chaos reign.
I'm not going to bet. Like I'm not going to bet totals. I don't think. Yeah. Okay. Much. I just don't know.
I'll hold you to that when, in 2 weeks, we've each got 15 totals to each week. Speaking of betting, why don't we hit the move the line segment here?
Let's do it.
So I'm very excited. I don't think I've ever hosted the over under on this show. So let's see how I do here. First of all, Adrian Peterson starts this season. Over under 1.5.
I would say over. I mean, he's probably better than who they have on their roster when he gets fully moving, right? When he gets going. Obviously, that position though, a start is not as important, obviously, as just you know, reps, right? But I'll go over. I think he's a Hall of Famer. He's a legend. When he's up to speed, he'll probably be starting again.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, Kerryon Johnson was everyone's fantasy darling. They drafted DeAndre Swift this year. I got to just say this. Adrian Peterson's PR team deserves a nice, like, tap on the head here. I mean, he was unsignable 3 years ago. And now it seems like everyone's falling all over themselves to praise his, like, upstanding character. I mean, do the Google search if you don't know what I'm talking about. Like, I was very surprised. I remain very surprised just how quickly everyone seemed to just forget about that.
This is not the time for that, but that point well taken. Yes.
Well, let's move on to a much happier story than that. And this is Alex Smith, who made the Washington football team roster. So let's say this, Alex Smith starts the rest of his career over under 0.5.
It's zero. Unless he gets a ceremonial start and takes a knee and just is done with football. Like that's a possibility. A ceremonial start just to say, hey, I made it back, to hand the ball off, take a knee, and that's it for him. So I will revise my bet to say over for that purpose. I do not think he plays in a game as NFL quarterback. I think he could take a ceremonial snap as NFL quarterback.
I think you're betting with your heart here and not your head. I don't think that Washington would have kept him on the roster if they didn't think he could actually play. I just think there's too many young players that they could have evaluated.
They owe him the money. His salary is guaranteed this year.
Sure, so put him on IR. Put him on the coaching staff. Like, there's a million other ways you could play him. You could pay him. I think that's a roster spot. That's really valuable.
You're a Washington football fan.
Unfortunately, yes.
He's had two practices, I believe, where he's taken live reps, right? And they're both in without pads on. And it was like one drive each, right? Or two drives, I think it was.
Sure.
Like he hasn't practiced. He's not going to play.
You're saying he's not going to play week one. Of course he's not going to play week one. He will not be.
He's not going to play all season.
But then why did they keep him on the roster? They could have kept another.
They owe him the money.
They would have owed him the money if they cut him. I don't understand what the argument.
That's why they kept him.
So to pay him to take a roster spot instead of cut
him. To pay him to basically to mentor Dwayne Haskins.
Sure, but he could have done that from Zoom via injured reserve. I really think that what this means is they think he is going to play again in his career. I'm not saying it's going to be week one. I'm not going to say it's going to be week 10. But I will say if he is anything, and let's play this out. We sort of did this a few weeks ago. If Haskins is good, then he might not play the whole season. If Haskins is great and they want to showcase Smith's value at some point during the season, he might play. If Haskins stinks, you would think that they would actually try to see if he's got anything, and so they could trade him. The Bears gave up a fourth rounder for Nick Foles to be Mitch Trubisky's backup. There's clearly got to be a spot for Smith if he can still play.
Or they kept Alex Smith for good publicity, right? Right now, we're talking about Alex Smith. not all the other terrible crap that's happening with the Washington football
Ruben
team.
They also kept Ruben Foster, but they kept him on IR, so I don't know.
You know, he's basically been cleared of like all three of those things. Go look it up. Nonetheless, still. But we're talking about Alex Smith and not the terrible dumpster fire that seems to be happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's true. God, my stupid football team. Well, yeah, I think we're going to talk more about the Washington team on Wednesday's show because I have a few things to run by you. All right. Well, this one was a really fun story this week. I don't know if you saw that Josh McCown signed with Philadelphia to be on their practice squad. Seems like Washington could have done this with Alex Smith, just saying, but they signed him to their practice squad, making him the oldest practice squad player ever. He'll make $12,000 a week. So weeks it would take Jeff Schwartz to get ready to join an NFL practice squad, over or under 3.5.
All right. Let's backtrack here. This year, because of COVID, they're allowing 6 veterans to be on practice. I did not know this until this happened this week.
Yeah, unlimited experience.
They're unlimited experience. It used to just be like you couldn't have played more than like a season or two on the roster. I saw Theo, the first guy I saw was Theo Riddick. Like, he was drafted in 2013 and he was on practice squad. So Josh McCown is getting $12,000 a week to live in Texas and be the Eagles' emergency quarterback. It equates to, you know, $200,000 for the year. It's a fantastic gig. He actually, by the way, his son used to play on the local high school down the street from my high school. I watched him this year coach a game, then flew back to Philly afterwards. I think they moved to, my guess is they moved to Texas so they could play football this year because North Carolina is not playing high school football. Huh. So nonetheless, my buddy said, my trainer said, Duke Manyweather said he could get me ready by October 1st to play football. We then pretended to joke about it. We posted a bunch of videos of me training from 2016. It was like, just back in it. Matt, there are no amount of weeks that I could get to get ready to play football again. The answer is never. Never going to happen. Ever, man, ever, ever.
I guess never again. Now that you're a member of the media, that's the $12,000 a week is just, that's beer money, right?
I thought to myself, like, okay, how would I make this right? Go to Dallas and start training. How do I do my podcast? I turned to Meredith and I was like, my wife, and I was like, that's what if someone were to sign me? And she's like, oh, well, all right. And no one's going to sign me. So we're not doing it. Even though, I'll tell you what, NFL teams are looking for veterans, man. They want to know veterans are in shape, especially for offensive linemen. I'm not that guy. If you want to sign me to be a cheerleader on Twitter for you, okay, fine. But I'm not playing football ever again. I'm totally fine with that.
I think you're fairly you're fairly booked in that capacity for the Kansas City Chiefs. So I don't know that.
I didn't get a ring or nothing for being a cheerleader.
Well, Jeff, you deserve it, buddy.
What is work? Okay, I obviously am a Chiefs fan. My brother plays for the Chiefs. Can we talk something about Derek Carr?
Wait, really?
Derek Carr.
David Carr.
David Carr. David Carr works at NFL Network. He picked the Raiders to win the AFC West. He picked John Gruden to win the coach of the year. He picked Hunter Renfrow to have the most touchdown catches this season. And he picked his brother to win the MVP. Dude, we get it. Your brother plays on the Raiders. We understand.
Jeff, this is not your lane. This is not your lane.
This is my lane. You're
the biggest fan of the world because your brother's on the team.
I bet against them in the AFC Championship game against the Patriots.
But on the podcast you said you didn't. That's the whole point.
Well, I didn't because I didn't want to. I don't really tell people when I bet like four against the Chiefs because I just my brother and I never talk about gambling. We never talk about much football much anymore. There's no point. Hey, buddy, how's your week going this week? Oh, you know, we put in 4 plays. We don't have any of those conversations. I don't really bet on the Chiefs. I just don't want people to think there's something happening. That's why. Sure. So in that game, there was one game that week. I had to bet it, obviously. It was part of the show AFC we were doing. I bet the Chiefs, even though I bet the Patriots. So
it's almost like putting Derek Carr as your MVP, knowing full well he has no chance in hell of being the MVP of anything.
Yeah. But if the Chiefs play terrible on Thursday and Mitch plays terrible, I'll tell you on Twitter, like, I have no problem doing that. I mean, Carr would never do that.
That's true. Well, look, we kind of got into it there. But this is the one where we're actually, I think, going to square off kind of hard, Jeff. So you tweeted something on September 6th, which was Sunday, of Labor Day weekend. Perfect day to get with your buddies on Zoom this year, crack a beer, and have a fantasy draft. And you tweeted, fantasy football drafts take way too long. Just explain. I mean, we have an over-under here. It's hours. A fantasy draft should take 2.5. Tell me why you're taking the under, because I can't understand it.
I'm not a big fantasy football guy, so maybe this is why. But like, I just, once I got my starters, I'm like, I just don't care anymore. I wanted one guy in like the middle rounds that was my guy that I wanted the Gibson kid, the running back for Washington. Like, that was my guy. Someone took him right before I was going to take him in like the 7th round. That pissed me off. And I was like, screw this. This is stupid. I don't need to draft. It's just part of it was we had 90 seconds between picks. People were taking all 90 seconds. Like, how do you not have your next guy just boom, 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 boom? Like, you shouldn't take that long in between picks. Get it done, folks. What are you doing?
The point of fantasy football is to prove to people you care about that you're smarter about football than them.
Your I have a podcast is... called Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You. Why do I need so to do that?
Prove it.
Fantasy? I don't do fantasy football.
Okay, do Matt, they need to have like, Matt, you know, last good year, protection as a stat so that you could actually pay attention? Is that what you need?
Last year, my Pancakes? Team won the first game and lost the next 13 weeks in a row. So I'm just like, whatevs. Like, my team is, who cares? I don't know. They graded me a B+ for the draft. So I obviously did a good job while I was bitching about it.
I guess because you played actual football, maybe it's less cool to play fake football. Is that, am I owning myself at this point?
I'd much rather lose money, I guess, gambling than lose money fantasy football.
Yeah, because at least you don't lose to your stupid friends from high school. Like, my draft is tonight. It's one of my favorite nights of the year. Everybody gets together. Everybody looks older and worse. Every year you do the same joke from the first time you ever drafted. It's just the best. It's just such a good way to talk smack to people you would never get the chance to otherwise.
I do with some dads of my son's friends too. I mean, it's fine.
Like, it's, well,
and it wasn't even in person. I get it in person. It's just on my computer. Like, hurry up, everybody. Yeah. I got things to do.
Yeah, in person is better.
All right, guys. Another fantastic show. Matt, appreciate you filling in. We'll be back later this week.
Pleasure.
Do the gambling show. Football's back, everyone. I'm so excited. Please rate, review, subscribe. We'll talk to you guys later in the week. Have a great couple of days. Get ready for football. Let's do it. It's happening. Let's go, folks.